You're listening to Arrivé by the Cycling Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to this special Arrivé episode of the Cycling Podcast Féminin. We're here and we're talking about the Olympic women's road race. When I say we, I mean me, Rose Manley, and down the line, Denny Gray of the British Continental. Hello, Denny.
Hello, Rose.
Sorry, we're still, I should explain, we're still laughing because of a little bit of a slip up that I made pre-recording in saying British Continental entirely perfectly. But we've recovered now, haven't we? We're professionals.
We have. The show must go on, Rose.
Yes, and we've got obviously a lot to talk about because this is going to be one of those spoiler-tastic episodes where we go into the nitty-gritty of what happened in the Women's Olympic road race and the women's time trial. We're going to mention that briefly as well. So if you haven't watched them, if you still want to catch up on them, then don't listen to this episode because the thrill of it would be slightly ruined for sure. But if you have watched it or if you, you know, want us to tell you what happened, then continue listening. But I did mention the time trial briefly there, Denny. That was a week ago. It almost seems like absolutely ages ago that the Olympic women's time trial was decided. That, of course, went to Grace Brown of Australia, who took the gold, with Anna Henderson of Team GB taking the silver and Chloe Dygert of the USA taking the bronze. It was kind of a gripping time trial, gripping not probably being the word I should use when it was so wet and rainy out there on those roads, but a staggering performance from Grace Brown, who won it by a good 1 minute and 31 seconds for a time trial that was a little over 30 kilometres. Denny, what did you make of that time trial?
Yeah, I mean, the rain certainly played a big part in the outcome, didn't it? So many riders going down at various points on the course. And it was a skill in itself just to stay upright and remain in contention. But yeah, fantastic ride from Grace Brown. Of course, she's retiring this year, at the end of this year, and wasn't really amongst the big names being mentioned as kind of pre-race favourites. Ellen van Dijk and Chloe Dygert were probably the names on everybody's lips. But she is, of course, an amazing time trialist, won Liège Bastogne Liège earlier this year. And I think people close to her were feeling this could be her time. And it was just, I mean, she dominated the race, actually. And of course, she stayed upright. But even if all of her competition had stayed upright, I think she probably still would have won. Such was her domination in that race.
Yeah, she was so strong. And it's amazing to think that she wasn't among the favourites when you do consider that Liège-Bastogne-Liège win that she got this year. You know, the fact that she's been twice has been second in the World Championships for time trial in the past. You know, she's won so many time trials both this year and last year. It's crazy that she wasn't at the forefront of everyone's minds. But what a way of you know, crowning her final season. And she did say she was hoping to go out in style, and you couldn't do better than that at all. And of course, we should also give a great mention to Anna Henderson, who won it by 1 second from Chloe Dygert, actually, the silver medal. Chloe Dygert, of course, crashing, which would have been a big part of why, she kind of got bronze instead of perhaps getting silver. But huge for Anna Henderson having such a difficult season this year, and she really hasn't been actually able to perform at all this year, has she?
No, I mean, that was a big surprise result in many ways. I mean, she is a good time trialist. I mean, she came fourth in the Worlds last year and she won the Nationals this year, but at the Nationals this year, that was a kind of lumpy course, when I feel like that's where Henderson thrives when it comes to time trialing. This was a much flatter parcours, and I think she maybe surprised herself in coming silver. So, but amazing determination to come back from two broken collarbones in quick succession in Spain to get silver.
Yeah, absolutely a huge performance from her. Well, we'll leave it there for the time trial. There's never much you can say about a time trial, dare I say that, but there's loads to say about today's road race. So just to give everyone a little reminder of what exactly went on in the Olympic road race, then I'm here to tell you. Well, the first major breakaway came with 139 kilometres to go, with Nora Jenčišová of Slovakia putting in a solo effort. Five riders eventually gave chase and joined her, creating a six-rider break of Jenčišová, Afghan sisters Yıldız and Fariba Yashimi, Rotem Gefinovitz of Israel, Taytat Nguyen of Vietnam, and Hannah Cherak. Their lead went out to 5.5 minutes on the peloton. But with the finishing circuits on the horizon, the gap began to tumble and the breakaway split apart. At the start of the first ascent of Montmartre, some of the breakaway were brought back, leaving just two riders out front. Chloe Dygert and Elise Chabet came down on a corner, further splintering the pack behind. Mavi Garcia and Kristen Faulkner drove on, though, and an elite group of riders was formed. Among them, Mariana Vos, Elisa Longo-Borghini, Blanca Vass, and three of the British team, Lizzie Dynan, Anna Henderson, and Pfeiffer Georgie, with Lotta Kopecky eventually bridging across. Demi Vollering, Lorena Vibus, and Kasia Niewiadoma leading the chase behind. On the second lap, there were repeated attacks from the front group by the British three. Dynan came straight over the top after being dropped and took Vass and Vos with her, but couldn't hold on herself. The small advantage of Vass and Vos extended as they worked well together, plateauing around the 30-second mark. And I should give honourable mention right now to Lionel here for coming up with a potential title. Not that we have potential titles for the Arrivé, but at that point he said a great title would be Vis-a-vis Vass et Vos, which he admitted himself became totally null and void pretty soon after, actually, because when they did go on to the final climb, and with Vos and Vass still ahead, Faulkner attacked what was left of the chasers with Kopecky for company. At the Sacré-Cœur summit, Faulkner and Kopecky were only 6 seconds behind the leaders. With only 3.4 kilometres to go, they made it into a four, but it was very short-lived, with Faulkner striking out for glory almost immediately. Vos, Vass and Kopecky looked at each other, giving Faulkner all the time she needed to take the Olympic title. And after a photo finish for the other medals, Vos got silver and Kopecky took bronze. Well, I mean, a huge win for Kristen Faulkner. Can't be denied, Denny. I mean, we've seen some fantastic performances from her, opportunistic performances. And this was, again, an opportunistic performance when it really mattered the most, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a tremendous performance from Faulkner throughout the race, not just the moment she attacked and took advantage of that, but she had appeared the strongest up on several occasions. She kind of seemed to keep her energy when she needed to. But then she, of course, played a massive role in that chase with Kopecky when Vos and Vass were out front. And her attack was just brilliant. I mean, it wasn't an out of the saddle kind of acceleration, look at me, I'm attacking move. It was, you know, in the saddle, in her kind of brilliant time trial position that we've seen her kind of adopt so many times when she's attacking on the road. And she just kind of slipped away. And as you say, everyone kind of looked around, and that the hesitation, of course, was deadly for her rivals. But it was a fantastic performance all around from Faulkner. And I love the fact that when she crossed the line, she just powered on through as if she still had another 5 kilometres to ride, perhaps only realising afterwards that she won. I think in the interview afterwards, she said she didn't quite know what was going on. But just absolutely amazing. What did you make of it, Rose?
Well, I thought that her sort of celebration, shall we say, though it wasn't a celebration, you know, having had yesterday Remco Evenepoel, you know, standing there with his bike and the mighty Eiffel Tower, it was a very different way of crossing the line, wasn't it? She was just head down, kept going. But I thought it was just such a typical picture of what we see Kristen Faulkner doing, don't we? Because she never turns around, she never looks around. I mean, if we cast our minds back to a fantastic win earlier this season in stage four at the Vuelta Femenina, it was quite similar. I mean, she had such a tiny, tiny gap over a group of favourites in that stage at the Vuelta. And anyone else would have taken a glance back and thought, what have I got, like, 3 seconds, I've got nothing. Like, you know, what's the point? Let me just keep my powder dry. I'll wait a bit longer. But I thought it was so typical of her to be like, well, this is my window of opportunity. I have to take this chance and I have to just bury myself, and I'm not going to look back and I'm not going to wonder what everyone else is doing. I've got to keep going. And that is also in a situation like the Olympics, where you kind of, this chance only comes around once every 4 years. They also don't have race radio, so there isn't a sense of what the situation is out on the road. You don't know if somehow you miscounted the number of riders and there is a rider ahead of you and who has won, then I guess kind of just going for the line as hard as possible at that point is the only way of winning it. And, you know, she was with the fastest riders over that kind of terrain, wasn't she, when she kind of met with Marianne Vos and Lotta Kopecky and Blanca Vass. So if you think, oh, if I can beat these guys, then I've probably got the beating of absolutely everyone. I imagine that's what she was thinking, and she absolutely went for it.
Yeah, I mean, she had 58 seconds to spare. I mean, maybe she was just making sure there wasn't an Anna Kiesenhofer kind of celebrating somewhere before she took time to celebrate herself. But yeah, it was a great move. It's interesting listening to her after the race, because she was, I think Adam Blythe on Discovery was questioning her about the move. And she said she knew she needed to make that move when she caught Vos and Vass. And she said almost that the move she'd made earlier in the season, almost like a rehearsal. She said, you know, she's been practicing those moves all year, and she knew how she was going to do it. And it was a fantastic move. And the other thing that struck me listening to her post-race was the fact that she's in the team pursuit team for the USA. She'll be riding the first qualifying round on Tuesday. And although she was a surprise winner, I guess, to many, she certainly wasn't among the favourites being talked about beforehand. She said to herself that she wouldn't enter that race unless she thought she could medal. And that was a promise she'd made to her teammates. So she clearly had a lot of confidence in her form. And I think we shouldn't do her a disservice by saying she won because Kopecky, Vos and Vass kind of looked at each other, although that obviously played a big role in her win. I think in many ways she appeared to be the strongest rider in the race throughout.
She did. And what's also more remarkable is that she wasn't originally called up for this road race at all. It was going to be Taylor Nibb was going to be representing the USA alongside Chloe Dygert. Taylor Nibb is a triathlete and was competing all the triathlete events at the Olympics. And then Taylor decided to step down from taking this road race spot. And as you said, Denny, because Kristen Faulkner is in the track team, she took the spot, and obviously so well known to us as road racing fans. So it's even more remarkable to step in at the last moment, to not be kind of thinking that your whole season, that this is this is the terrain I'm going to win on and this is the course. And I'm sure a lot of the other riders in the peloton have been thinking about nothing but this road race. So it makes her achievement all the more remarkable.
Absolutely. And well, I guess a bit like Henderson, she's had to come back through over adversity. She was hit by a car in May last year, had a torrid season last season. And of course, this season's been on peak form. But before today, she only had 11 pro wins. So, you know, she doesn't get wins often, but when she gets wins, it seems she gets them pretty comprehensively. And, this will clearly be her biggest, I'd imagine, probably be her biggest win in her career. Well, certainly to date, but perhaps ever. And what a moment for her. She came into racing late, didn't start racing till 2017, became a pro kind of later on. And it's great to see that, you know, I we've talked about it a lot before, Rose, but I love seeing athletes coming late into the sport and, you know, succeeding. It's not just about kind of the youngsters coming through and being plucked as 18-year-olds to become pros. It's a fantastic story.
Yeah, she is. We did mention her, didn't we, in our late comers mini feature that was earlier in the year, because she was a rower. And I do urge everyone to go back into the Cycling Podcast archives. I wish I could point you exactly to the episode. It would have been helpful if I'd looked it up. But Richard did a fantastic interview with Kristen Faulkner, a really long kind of 20-30 minute interview with her, all about her background as a rower and living in Alaska, which is, you know, so far from the heartlands. And I guess that's like a very beautiful image, isn't it? That this girl from Alaska comes to Paris, which has got to be, you couldn't get more center of the cycling heartlands than Paris. And, you know, the finish of the Tour de France being there almost every single year. What a beautiful and very fitting Olympic story, I think.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why, like you, he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. All so that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
Well, Denny, it was a real nail-biter of a finale, but with Vassenvos ahead, where did you think it was going to go? How did you think that the race was going to play out at the end, at the very end there?
It was, well, as you say, it was a nail-biter, and I think it was one of those ones it was hanging finally in the balance. I think there was a moment that crossed my mind where I thought, that's it, game over, Voss and Vass are going to win. There's no way anyone's going to claw that back that time. Will the chase work well enough together to bring them back? But then, of course, I mean, I think they had 30 seconds ahead of the five chasers, as it was then, at the bottom of the final climb of Montmartre. And at that point, I thought perhaps that's game over, because I thought the chasers would need kind of less time in arrears to claw it back. But Faulkner led an incredible surge up the climb, and the gap by the top was only 4 seconds, with only Capecchi able to kind of cling to her wheel. And but even then, it was hanging in the balance, wasn't it, Robes? I mean,
well, it stayed at that kind of between 4 and 6 seconds for a long time.
Yeah. And we just didn't know how it was going to play out. I mean, they finally clawed it back with 3.3 to go. And I guess that Faulkner really did need Capecchi to work with her. And she said after the race that she had to make Capecchi work at times, because Capecchi, as I'm sure we'll talk about in a moment, was probably thinking about a sprint at some point and trying to beat Marianne Vos in a sprint. But so I think, you know, huge credit again goes to Faulkner there, because it was her belligerence, her determination that brought them back to Vass and Vos.
But how much did you make of the kind of looking at each other of Vass, Vos and Capecchi? Because, well, for me, I was, first of all, when, you know, Faulkner was doing any of the work after they'd kind of gone over the top of the Sacré-Cœur, I was thinking, you know, what are you doing, Faulkner? Like, you haven't got a chance to beat Capecchi if they kind of all come in a sprint. You haven't got a hope in hell. So, you know, make Capecchi do all of the work. You know, don't do anything yourself. You know, Capecchi's going to be desperate to win an Olympic title. You should kind of rely on that. So I was kind of, you know, tearing my hair out watching her do it. Obviously, it didn't matter in the end at all. But but I did think it was crazy that Vass, Capecchi and Vos hesitated, because, you know, Faulkner is not an unknown rider. And the thing that she is known for, in fact, is getting a tiny gap and going for it as a solo breakaway so close to the end as well. You would have thought, with Vass, Vos and Capecchi knowing that they were way faster than Faulkner in a sprint, that you would think, look, there are three medals on the line. If we can just hold on to Faulkner not even for very long. You know, they don't have to hold on for that long at that point. If we can just hold on to her, then we can settle these three medals between ourselves as the fastest riders. And, you know, they were also evenly matched, weren't we? As we saw in the photo finish for the silver and bronze. I just thought it was absolutely madness that they looked at each other for even a millisecond, because all they needed to do was hold on to Faulkner in order to get guarantee themselves a medal.
Well, of course, I mean, I think you look back in hindsight and it was madness, and I'm sure lots of people were screaming at the TV at that point, wondering what they were doing, because Faulkner, as you say, is so well known for these moves. But then it only takes a slight hesitation. We've seen it time and time again. And then the game's almost gone, isn't it? Because you've then got to negotiate who's going to chase, and are we all going to cooperate? And am I going to lead the two others to Faulkner, and then I'll have no energy left? And so it was all down to that split seconds of decision. And it was interesting listening to some of the interviews afterwards, because clearly Faulkner knew exactly what she was going to do when the catch was made.
But surely they all knew that Faulkner was going to do that. That was my feeling, that surely they would all think the only way that she's got a hope for, you know, for a title or even for any medal would be to go before us. You know, that I thought they would all know that. They would all know that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Voss and Capecchi cancelled each other out, didn't they? They both had that sprint in their minds, and they both had each other in their minds. And Voss actually did chase Temp initially, and then she paused and hesitated. And I think with Capecchi and Voss kind of behind Voss, one of them would have had to made a big effort to try to claw back Faulkner. And I guess neither wanted to do that, because neither wanted to work for the other. It's interesting, listening to the interviews afterwards, Capecchi said she thought Voss would do the chasing, which is clearly a mistake in hindsight. And Voss said she didn't have the legs. But as you say, it just feels like, I mean, all kudos to Faulkner. She was, as you know, you were saying, why was she doing the work with Capecchi to bring them back? But in those situations, sometimes you've just got to go for it, haven't you? And gamble and hope that what you're doing pays off. And Voss, Voss and Capecchi weren't prepared to gamble at that point, and they paid the price.
Well, we should also give mention to the British team, which had, I think, three riders among 10 that in that front group that kind of went away on that first ascent of Montmartre. And obviously, Lizzie Dynan actually created that Voss and Voss move by, you know, when she was dropped, she came back, came straight past, took Voss and Voss with her, and then very promptly got dropped by them. But, you know, amazing to have three there in that lead group, but they weren't able, were they, to capitalize on that?
No, I mean, at one point it looked like they were playing a blinder. It was clear that they had to work for Georgie, because on the first ascent of Montmartre, Deignan and Henderson both slipped off towards the top and had to chase back on. So at that point it looked like Georgie was the strongest of the three. And they did a great job, actually, of driving the lead group, especially Deignan, put in huge effort to keep the chasers at bay, because at that point, Vollering, of course, was trying to bring Vibus back into contention, and Nivea Doma was in that group as well. So they did a great job of keeping them at bay. And at times they were also kind of attacking and counter-attacking, Deignan and Henderson taking turns, forcing the other chasers to, well, chase, the other leaders to chase. So I thought they played a great game. And there was that moment, wasn't there, where Henderson and Deignan had been dropped, as you said in your summary. They then kind of caught up with the lead group, and Deignan decided to attack over the top straight away. And in some ways, that was the right move to do. You know, perhaps they didn't have the energy to kind of work at the front, but they wanted to put additional pressure on the lead group. But of course, Voss and Voss chased on, and Deignan ran out of energy very quickly, and that played into Voss and Voss's hands completely.
I mean, I guess if Pfeiffer Georgie had been able to get on that move and catapult herself up there and then dine and, you know, drop off. That would have been perhaps maybe what that's what they were going for. But I know that Fifa Georgie said herself that she just didn't quite have the, you know, she felt good all day, but just didn't have the legs when it kind of really mattered. Crucially at the end. I mean, you touched there, Denny, on, I mean, the TV coverage was mad. Let's we just say that. Yeah. So I'm hoping that we're getting everything right when we're kind of recapping what happened, because there was, you know, attention paid to people in groups absolutely miles away that gave a really warped sense of what on earth was going on. But we did see plenty of this chase group, which was led by Demi Vollering, who was trying to bring Lorena Wiebes back, obviously a Dutch teammate. What did you make of that? Because obviously they had Marianne Vos in the front group, again, another Dutch teammate. Clearly, at the beginning of the day, they were kind of aiming to get Lorena Wiebes up there, knowing that she is so fast as a sprinter that she would certainly smoke anyone in that situation. But did that strike you as odd, Denny, that the fact that, you know, you have the greatest of all time, your teammate, who's performing absolutely phenomenally this year, and you're still kind of, I wouldn't say she wasn't putting in a crazy effort to chase back, but she was certainly the only rider on the front for the whole time and was trying to rope other people in and wasn't getting anywhere. So yeah, what did you make of Vollering trying to chase back on Vos?
Yeah, that's a good one. I hadn't actually really thought about it. I was so caught right. up in what was happening out front. But yeah, I mean, now you say it, it does strike me as odd. I mean, clearly there are team loyalties there to some degree, although Vollering will be moving to another team next season, yet to be announced. But yeah, it could have backfired if it had come off, couldn't it? Because she could have brought not just Wiebes back into contention, but Divya Doma and some other very dangerous riders. I mean, Vollering talked about wanting to do it because I think she described it as being able to shuffle the cards again if she brought it all back together. And I guess maybe you could have thought, well, at that stage, there was still quite a long way to go when she was chasing with three Dutch riders there at the front. They would have had a few options rather than Vos being isolated against three GB riders and some other very dangerous riders. So I can kind of understand Vollering's logic to some extent. I mean, in the end, it didn't matter, did it? But it was an odd one. What did you make of it, Rose?
I know I posed you the question, Denny, but I hadn't really thought. I just found it very surprising because, to be honest, I had actually thought that Vos was in with a really good chance. Not to say that now that she's won the silver medal, but genuinely, I did really think that Vos was in with a great chance because I thought it suited her really well. But even as the greatest of all time, she kind of floats under the radar sometimes because she does have to do these things herself. You know, a lot of attention would have been paid to Lorena Wiebes, Demi Vollering, you know, the star that she is and the season that she's had was getting a lot of attention. And of course, Lotta Kopecky, you know, you could never question her. So I thought that Vos had a really good chance. So I was surprised that perhaps the team didn't also, weren't backing Marianne Vos fully. But then, you know, like Vollering said, like you said, I guess if you have all of the Dutch are so known for being so strong and having four riders in the race, which is, you know, sounds tiny, but is actually when there are so many solo riders in the race from most of the nations, kind of only have one rider or one or two, then you want to play your numbers. If you have the numbers, I guess you want to play them. And that's how they've won everything that they have won, is by playing the numbers. And you think we're going to win with this rider, but actually we've got this champion and that champion to play. But yeah, I was backing Vos personally.
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? Because Vos is so good at operating on her own. We've seen it this season. She doesn't have, often hasn't had kind of Visma, Lisa Bike teammates around her. And still kind of pulled off big wins. I felt the crash as well really affected how the race played out. There was that, as you mentioned in the summary, there was that crash between Daiga and Shabby, and they were towards the front of the peloton, and that caused some splits. And listening to Vollering afterwards, she said she was caught behind the the split, and so was Lotta Kopecky. Vibus was actually in front of the split, but Vollering and Kopecky obviously had to try to chase back. But that was really where that initial move kind of started, and meant that it kind of gave a head start to Faulkner and the GB riders and co. And I mean, we have to remember, of course, that Kopecky put in an enormous effort on her own to chase back to those 10 leaders, which must have taken a lot out of her as well, and probably had an impact on the way she was able to race in the finale as well. But that really did seem to kind of set the template for the race, because it knocked out some of the contenders. Cassie Nevedoma was caught up behind as well, of course. So, I felt that was a defining moment in the way the race played out.
And it was also, they were such a fitting group, weren't they? It wasn't like this group kind of appeared and they weren't the riders that you would expect to be there. It was such an elite group that became that lead group. And it wasn't like a major crash, but it was because it was also so narrow, wasn't it? The roads that they were racing on were so narrow. And we saw Dygert getting very frustrated at a car when she was trying to overtake them, because there was hardly space for... it was hardly more than the width of a car, wasn't it? A lot of those kind of roads.
Yeah. And the race, it came at a time as well when, just leading up to that, it was attack and counterattack again and again and again. And every single rider in that front bunch seemed determined to want to make the elastic snap and get in that move that would finally get away. So it happened at that time, and of course those 10 riders took advantage of that and got away. And as you say, it was a really, really classy group. Every single one of those riders could have potentially been a winner, so it wasn't as if it was just a kind of a potluck group that got away.
And it did have that kind of wonderful sort of Olympic magic, didn't it, in the run-up to that? Well, partly because of the scenes, and I'm kind of I think we didn't get quite so many aerial shots in the women's race as we did in the men's, which I'm very thankful for, because it was kind of the men's race was just layer upon layer of scenes of Paris. Very beautiful, very stunning, and fantastic crowds. I mean, imagine the crowds were just a thrill to see. But a real spectacle, wasn't it? It kind of had that magic and that occasion. But also just for kind of the makeup of that first early group and some of the early riders to try and get away, having some of the smaller nations represented, having riders up there at the front of the race, who we don't see in road racing traditionally. I think that's part of the kind of why the Olympics is so wonderful and why we love to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, that was great to see. And it's always a test for the commentator sometimes, isn't it, to get the pronunciations right of these riders you don't normally see on TV. But it was a fantastic moment for the two Afghanistan sisters, the Hashimi sisters, 21 and 24, Fariba and Yildiz, who I think only got into cycling a few years ago in Afghanistan, at a time when, participating in sport for women was frowned upon. I think they had to do it covertly initially to get into it. And then, of course, they had to flee from the country when the Taliban took over in 2021, managed to get to Italy and join a team. And this year they've been taken under the wing of the World Cycling Center. So I thought it was fantastic to see those two riders go from, having to kind of don baggy clothing and kind of cover up their faces just to be able to get into a race and kind of go behind their family to even get on a bike. When they saw a race advertised in Afghanistan, they thought, that sounds really exciting. They didn't have any bikes and they didn't know how to ride a bike. So quickly learned and then raced. So it was to go from that situation to, as you say, being in front of those magical crowds in Paris in the sunshine was just a really, really lovely moment. And of course, you don't have a combativity award in the Olympic road races, but I think if there was one, I think I'd give it to Fariba Hashimi, who was pretty much the last one standing from the break.
I know, it's fantastic to see her right out the front of those crowds and kind of bringing the race onto those, that finishing circuit in Montmartre, which, you know, was everything kind of we'd hoped for. And having seen the men's race be, you know, such a spectacle, we were, had obviously very high hopes for this one, and it didn't disappoint, did it?
No, I mean, it was a, it was, we haven't really said it yet, but it was a brilliant, brilliant race, especially when it got into, back into Paris. It was just nonstop. The attacking didn't stop throughout. There was so much tension. We didn't know until 3 kilometers to go who the winner would be. I was half expecting a puncture or something else dramatic to happen. Half expecting the TV director to show Chloe Dygert in the closing kilometer,
yeah,
or something like that. And we
will
miss, yeah, we missed the sprint for silver. But yeah, what an amazing race. We've just been spoiled with great one day racing this year, and I think that was probably one of the best yet.
Well, it's also fantastic for us to see a fantastic, almost like a warm up for the Tour de France Femmes, which is obviously starting next week. Me and Denny are going to be very busy creating a Tour de France Femmes preview. But it's interesting to see how kind of everyone's condition is doing as well, isn't it? Knowing that that's, we're kind of a week away from that, and how everyone is faring. And also just to get, you know, a few of those beautiful French views in already before we prepare to take ourselves away for a week. Well, I say French views, but actually the, you know, the whole thing's going to start in Rotterdam. But yeah, anyway, very excited for that, aren't we, Denny? The Tour de France fam. Of course, the Cycling Podcast are going to be there doing daily coverage from that. And as I say, in the coming days, we'll be putting out a Tour de France fam preview. So we'll be kind of highlighting who's going well and who isn't, and exactly what's going to go, not exactly what's going to go on the race, what we think might happen in the race, which might turn out to be totally wrong. Well, Denny, thank you very much for joining me for this Olympic road race Arrivé episode. And well, we'll hear from you very soon, won't we?
We're going to be seeing a lot of each other over the next few days and weeks, aren't we, Rose?
So we are.
I look forward to it very much so, but it was lovely to chat today too.
Thanks very much, Denny.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb and Lionel Burney.